All right, we got an action-packed workshop. We got three people sharing. We're going to get into it real quick. Everybody have about 20, 25 minutes apiece. I'll give you all a warning. No worries. First up, Kelly B. Branson. Branson, Missouri.
Thank you. I'm an addict. My name's Kelly. I'm really grateful for the familiar faces I see out here. So thank you so much. I don't know if we're supposed to say our clean time. My clean date is 7/5/18. I am from Branson. My home group is called Freedom for Growth. We meet every night at 8 at the Ozark Serenity Club. I really appreciate the topic. I was surprised whenever the committee asked my sponsor to do this, and she was busy, and so she was like, Kelly will do it. That's how I get a lot of these gigs, is because they ask her and she's busy. And I'm grateful for it, you know? Gives me a chance to shine, so grateful for that. But I was a little surprised whenever I called and talked to the person kind of in charge of assigning the workshops that this was still a topic that wasn't filled yet, because I think it's such a great topic to talk about. And it really lines up with what I've been doing in my personal recovery, because I just finished working the 12th tradition out of the Guiding Principles book. We have a big event in Branson called Spirit Quest, and I was the speaker at that this last year. And my goal was to finish the Guiding Principles book before I took that speaking role. And I will say that this topic really, really does make me think about the third tradition, that it only takes a desire. You know, it doesn't take anything but a desire, and that's such a beautiful concept. But it also really reminds me of the 12th tradition. You know, a big part of the 12th tradition is principles before personalities. And when we're talking about discrimination, that's extremely important. I will say, just, you know, if I'm going to talk about how the disease does not discriminate, I don't know if you guys can see my little, this is like the third draft. I'm an overachiever. I've always been an overachiever. But, you know, the disease did not care that I was a straight-A student, that I was, you know, top of my class. The disease did not care that I grew up in a good family and had loving parents. The disease did not care that I was a mother. The disease did not care that I was a pregnant mother. You know, I was unfortunately unable to get clean during my pregnancy. It didn't care. I wish it would have, but it doesn't. I could go on and on and on about how the disease does not discriminate, but I think we all know that, because if you don't, look around the room. Everybody in here is going to represent a certain type of person from a different area with different upbringing. It doesn't care who you are. I mean, that's probably really simple to understand, so I'm not going to elaborate that on that a lot more. I will say that kind of more subtly, I think that once we've been clean for a little while, we need to realize that it still doesn't discriminate, right? Because it doesn't care how much clean time I've had. It doesn't care how much of the literature I've read. It doesn't care that now I work in a substance use role as a peer. It doesn't care about my credential. It doesn't care that I'm a homeowner or, you know, go to all these things. If I'm not working my program to the best of my ability every day, which involves my step work, my sponsor, my service, my meetings, and my higher power, then it's going to come in. And it's going to come in a number of ways, you know, and they're sneaky. It waits. You know, what I see a lot is the arrogance, the denial, and the doubt. So in that arrogance of, oh, I've got this clean time, or I've got this credential, so it can't affect me anymore, bet your ass it's gonna, because you're getting a little too sure of yourself, you know. One of the spiritual principles that I really think goes along with the 12th tradition and with this topic is humility. I have to have humility for the disease, because it is always going to be bigger than I am. I cannot let the life that I've built convince me that my addiction is under control, ever. You know, when I think about the denial, there are things that, like, the farther I get in my process, you know, sometimes I think, well, that solution won't work for me. That's denial, trying to sneak in. I don't need to listen to that person's message because I don't like them. That's denial, sneaking in. I don't need to go to that home group or that meeting because I don't like the vibe over there. You know, that is the denial. It's coming in a way that is more subtle and more sneaky, but it's coming all the same, and it still holds that same power. You know, and then whenever I think about the doubt, you know, I think we all fall victim to the, I'm just not good enough. You know, I'm not strong enough. It's, you know, and just sometimes thinking the disease is more powerful than me, it sucks to think about. You know, it's a hard truth that we have to face every single day. I remember I had a surgery a couple years ago, and I thought, well, maybe it just won't affect me like it did, you know, because I had to take medication for the surgery. And I thought, maybe it just won't affect me the way that it did. But it did, you know. And luckily for me, I listened to the suggestions. I gave my medication to my husband. I was honest with my doctor. And I didn't have to go back down that route of relapse. But that was because I practiced vigilance in that. But that self-doubt, you know. One of the lines that really stood out to me in the 12th tradition is that sometimes in recovery we go through darkness, and sometimes we're not living within our spiritual principles, but that does not take away from the remarkableness of our recovery, you know. And when I read that, it was a day that I really needed to be reminded of that, because that self-doubt, it's a big way that proves that our disease does not discriminate. The other spiritual principles that I really, really wanted to think about whenever I got this topic is, well, I talked about humility a little bit. I think I'm going to expand on that more before I move on. You know, humility is, you know, when I think of like the arrogance, the denial, and the doubt, I think of that's when we're discriminating against ourselves, because that's something that we can do. I think that more often when we think of discrimination, we think about treating others differently, and it's really important not to do that in this program, right? Because it says in our readings that it's the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. It doesn't say one addict with more clean time, or one addict that drives a nicer car, or one addict that is the same gender as you. Like, it specifically leaves that open so that it's one addict helping another. You know, being teachable is a skill and a gift. But what I see sometimes is, like, I can be teachable by somebody that's a sponsor or somebody that has more clean time than me. That's not really being teachable. Being teachable is being able to take suggestions from anybody that, you know, that it sounds the same out of anybody's mouth. If it's a good suggestion, it's a good suggestion. And I think that goes along with, you know, humility. If I'm not willing to take a suggestion from somebody with one day clean, but I'll take that same suggestion from somebody with 20 years clean, then there's not something wrong with them. There's something wrong with me. Sorry, I have my notes. The other spiritual principle that I thought about with this topic was anonymity. Anonymity is such a broad subject, but what I really liked in the 12th step is that in the 12th tradition, is they said that anonymity means any. You know, I can get the message from any meeting. I can get the message from any piece of literature. I can get the message from any fellow addict if I'm looking, because everybody is capable of carrying a clear message. It also says that anonymity equals equality. You know, when I think of what is the opposite of discrimination, I think diversity and equality. So anonymity definitely has to be on the list if we're talking about how not to discriminate against other people or against ourselves. I don't know that I'm going to take 15 minutes. I'm so sorry. The other spiritual principle that I really thought about is unity. You know, this is such a we program. I love events like this because when I focus on my we, it takes me out of my me. And my me is a hot mess on a good day, you know. My me likes to sit in my head and overthink and blame and pity party. And when the weather gets like this, I'm like, ew, no. I just want to be in my hole. But when I get into my me, you know, when I get into the unity, whether it's a group service or, you know, just working with a fellow addict, you know, that unity is what keeps us together. When I spoke at Spirit Quest a few weeks ago, my sponsor had given me a couple spiritual principles to expand on. One of them was solidarity, and I think about solidarity as unity in action. How much unity does it take to put on something like this? You know, this is a huge deal. And I bet y'all want to cut each other's throats at some point, but you don't. And that's the beauty, you know, because we're working on our we. It says in our 12th tradition that our common welfare is due to our personal welfare. So when we are well as a group, we are well as individuals. We have to be good in our we if we want to exist in our me. And I just, you know, I know that when, like, I'm not doing okay, it is a direct reflection of what is going on. When my home group is not doing okay, it is generally a direct reflection of where I'm at. If I want my home group to be better, I have to be better. If I want the message to be stronger, I have a duty to carry a clearer message of recovery. And when we all are like-minded in that way, that's when we're able to do things like this. We're able to come together and provide an entire weekend of amazing recovery to I don't even know how many people. I mean, this is insane. You guys are standing in the back. Crazy. The last spiritual principle that I really wanted to talk about, and I think that this is the one that I really like the most. I mean, I like unity and anonymity and humility, but it's connection. You know, when we are not discriminating against each other, we are able to build connection. Some people will argue that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, that it's connection. I work as a peer. I work with pregnant and postpartum moms, and a lot of what I do is I teach them how to build a secure connection with their kids. And how do we do that? Well, first we have to build trust. They have to be able to trust, that child has got to be able to trust that parent is going to take care of them. It's not any different here. We need connection to survive. You know, it takes like 12 hugs a day to grow. Like, it takes like 3 hugs a day just to survive at baseline. But if you want to grow, you need like 12 hugs a day. And we are in the business of giving hugs because we understand how important connection is. We, as, you know, a unified, solid front, you know, how do we build connection? One is not discriminate. I mean, that's a pretty easy one. But making people feel welcome in the rooms. You know, I think that sometimes we all get into our heads and we sit in a meeting like all grumpy and shit. What is that saying to the newcomer that comes in? You know, I've been trying to be really mindful lately of, like, if I'm at a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, I better be damn grateful and lucky and that this is a blessing, because I want the person that comes in thinking maybe I can change my life to see that, yeah, you can. And you can have a good time doing it, because if we're not having fun, we're not going to keep doing anything. You know, having that welcoming, recovery-minded atmosphere, taking the time to just connect with people in the most basic ways. You know, a lot of times it is not the person standing up here talking about what they know based off the literature. This isn't. I mean, sure, this can lead to connection. But what more often leads to connection is a smile, a handshake, a hug, a hey, how you doing? And we're all capable of doing that. And if we're not taking the opportunities to do that, then we are really shortchanging each other and this program. The last thing that I want to share was just another thing that I read out of the 12th tradition that I really just think is so powerful and sums up really a lot of this. And, you know, if I ever really think about discriminating against anybody, I think that this will put me in my place. And it says, we care because we share a common problem and a common solution. And in that, we find common ground and a common purpose. Thank you for letting me share.
Kelly, thank you very much. Hey man, next up is Alan B. from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tulsa. Yeah.
I love you, man.
I'm Alan, I'm an addict. Can everybody hear me? I'm a loud individual. My clean date is 28 March 2000. And I tell you that because when I came to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I was an anomaly. You see, there weren't in my area a lot of black people. There weren't people who spoke another language. There weren't people who were openly gay. Our area was very white. Okay. I was looking for some politically correct word, but there you have it. I also tell you my clean date so that you know that a guy like me can get clean and stay clean in Narcotics Anonymous. When I came around, we also kept hearing there's no good clean time in Narcotics Anonymous. Would everybody who's got 20 years or more clean please raise their hand? Would everybody who's got 25 years or more clean please raise your hand?
Thank you.
And I could go on and on and on, but this is Narcotics Anonymous. Welcome. I'm going to read two paragraphs out of this wonderful book, Living Clean. I love this book. It was like the next step from It Works How and Why. Somebody said that from the podium yesterday. Practicing compassion helps us stop comparing ourselves to others. We start seeing the deep connections and similarities between us. Our traditions teach us that we are all equal. This doesn't mean that we are the same. Our differences are striking and sometimes very entertaining. Most of us have shared that part of what made us feel comfortable in our earliest meetings, and that is that there are so many different kinds of people in a single meeting, sharing and appearing friendly with one another. This could contrast sharply with what we've experienced before in and out of active addiction. The things that separate us from the outside world don't matter in Narcotics Anonymous. The disease does not discriminate. Thank you, Kelly. You really drove that home.
Yeah.
We know this to be true in principle, but it's sometimes a struggle in practice. Some patterns of prejudice and discrimination are so deeply woven into the fabric of our lives that we don't even notice them. On the other hand, we've had a lifetime of experience dealing with oppression and discrimination. We may be so conscious of its signs that we see it even where it does not exist. For some of us, hearing our story or identifying is all about finding someone who shares our background or beliefs. Not experiencing that right away can be frustrating or frightening. I can see it work, some of us have said, but not for someone like me. When other members tell us our need for that companionship is overstated, we don't feel welcomed, we may feel even more invisible. And it goes on to say, we may be surprised by the members whose stories we relate to or with whom we feel comfortable talking. A little bit of history. I first got acquainted with Narcotics Anonymous in 1987. That's my first NA meeting, was at a hospital in Tulsa. And I walked in that meeting, and instead of hearing the life-saving message that I hear today when I walk into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, I couldn't get past the leather and the tattoos and walking around the Harleys to get into the meeting. So I had to go back out. And when I went back out, I went to prison. There was Narcotics Anonymous in prison.
Come on. Yeah.
I didn't stay clean. I got out of prison and I tried some meetings because I could see, you know, Narcotics Anonymous ruined my using. I don't know about you. But once I got acquainted with Narcotics Anonymous, using was not, it didn't have that flavor it used to have. So I ended up going back to prison, and I got out this time, and it was truly the end of my road. I knew that if I didn't do something different, I was going to die. I was going to die of an overdose. I was going to die of sudden lead poisoning. I was going to die because I fought the police to keep from going back to prison, but I was going to die. So this time when I got out of prison, I stayed clean and I started following suggestions. I got a sponsor who sponsored me for 5 years before I found out his connections to the Klan. There's a lesson there. See, that had no place in our meetings. That wasn't a thing that I needed to discuss with him. I was hungry for how to stay clean. I was hungry for how to catch up on my taxes and how to get a job. I was hungry for how to get my driver's license. But let me tell you, I came to a meeting and I was amazed at the number of people who applauded when somebody shared and I got my driver's license back. See, I knew then, no matter what I looked like, that I was in the right place. Where else can prison qualify you to talk to somebody? I see some guy in the back who says, yeah, I just got out yesterday, and I walk up and I, you know, get permission to hug him, and I hug him, and we got something to talk about, man. He feels part of that. I remember when I came, I didn't feel part of that. It's my responsibility to welcome that newcomer. I stayed clean at first out of spite. I wasn't approachable. I see people today come into the rooms with that same bristly demeanor when they walk in. And it's my personal responsibility to welcome them.
Yep.
It's my personal responsibility to remember their name. I can't tell you how many different conventions, how many places I've been, and I've heard it said from the stage, from the front of the room, the fact that they remember my name, the fact that they welcomed me, made me keep coming back. You see, I am in a life or death struggle today.
All right.
I have 25 years clean. And you know what? The disease of addiction can still kill me if I let my guard down. The disease of addiction can separate me from you who are actively saving my life. The disease can make me destroy relationships that I've built so carefully over so long. It doesn't mean I have to punch holes in my arm. There's other ways that that disease can destroy my life. So I got clean, went to prison. I got clean in jail on my way to prison the second time. And I got a sponsor who was he was the perfect guy for that point in my recovery. I've heard that two or three times from up here. The guy told me, you know, I happened to work with him. He was my boss at my job. He helped me get my job, and he was my boss. And his sponsor was his boss at the same job. So my sponsor would give me an exercise. You know, he would say, okay, yeah, you're not listening. You need to read this or that. I go tell my grand sponsor. And he might give me an assignment. But the thing is, I stopped looking at those obvious differences and started focusing on similarities. Once I started focusing on similarities, I started hearing my story coming out of mouths that didn't look like my mouth. Once I started focusing on those similarities, I got solutions to challenges that were hitting me from all directions. See, my sponsor was very active in my life, but man, I heard a lot of good things from other people. Other people who were clean, other people who were dealing with the challenges of being in a relationship early in recovery and trying to figure out what to do with that. With the challenges of getting to work on time every day, getting a vehicle that I could count on. You know, these are challenges that directly relate to my ability to function as an addict in recovery. Now, I commented on somebody's shirt today, and everybody knows Danny Huggs. I've made a comment about his shirt, and he pointed out that, you know, outside issue. Okay? And it's interesting that I forgot that, because that outside issue thing, my sponsor kept a lot of things outside that I didn't need to know about, that might have confused me early in recovery, that might have challenged my desire to stay clean early in recovery, that might have stopped me from sponsoring somebody early in recovery. Outside issues are my enemy. You see, unity, our personal recovery depends on NA unity. Does that sound even vaguely familiar? And those outside issues challenge that unity. Right. Now, I want to differentiate between an outside issue and needing to get a car to get to a meeting and getting to work. See, there are these subtle distinctions in the rooms. And if I'm talking to my sponsor, and if I have a good relationship with the men in this wonderful fellowship, the right thing comes at the right time for me. I also made notes, because I go blank sometimes. I'm going to read you something from the basic text, actually. I love our literature. You shouldn't have gave it to me if you didn't want me to read it. I'm not going to tell you what this is from, but raise your hand when you recognize it. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are, wait a minute, not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement group, and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us, regardless of age. I'm an old fucker now. So I get to stay. Race. I'm seeing a lot more diversity in our rooms. Sexual identity. One of the people who was really close to me, he's not here today, told me once, it shouldn't matter if I'm gay or not if you're not trying to fuck me. Wait a minute. Creed. Religion. Or lack of religion. Man, this saved my life, and now I'm comfortable. I don't have to contort myself to fit comfortably in these rooms today. I don't have to bite my tongue. Now, that does mean that I need to be socially correct. Telling certain types of jokes, dick jokes, is not appropriate. telling racial jokes, keep those. I love you, but keep those. Keep coming back.
Right.
I heard a guy from Albuquerque once say that I came to a room warmed by a fire that I didn't light. Put another log on the fire. See, it's my responsibility today as a recovering addict to provide a safe, comfortable opportunity for our seeds to sprout. I can't, you know, it tells me in my literature to carry the message, not the addict. So it's my job to prepare that field so that these seeds can sprout. I can't tell you how many times I've heard one or two things that clicked with me. That spiritual awakening Kelly was talking about. You know, that we have a wonderful thing here. And thank you, Narcotics Anonymous. I'm going to close with the thing I heard at a meeting in Kansas City. This is my chair. It's the most expensive piece of property that I own, this chair. I paid for this chair with jail time, prison time. I paid for this chair with my mother's tears. I paid for this chair with prison, being absent from my family on holidays. I paid for this chair with blood, sweat, and tears. Interesting thing about this chair, it's in every meeting of Narcotics Anonymous that I go to all over the world, is my chair. Nobody can take my chair from me. I can give my chair away, but nobody can take my chair. Thank you for letting me share.
Alan, thank you very much. Thank you. All right, next up, we're going to keep rolling. It's Daniel S. from Sand Springs. Sand Springs, Oklahoma.
Yeah, my name is Daniel. I'm an addict. I am so incredibly grateful to be here. I really do appreciate the previous two speakers. That those shares, especially the first one, really reminded me of something a little different than a lot of times whenever we talk about discrimination, our minds race straight to race and sexuality.
Yeah.
And like, I'll get into that. But it was the first one really reminded me of something. I've been clean for over 15 years now. And I'm extremely impressed by myself. You know, I'm just telling you, you know. I'll tell you a little bit about me. I've got a huge ego, you know. I speak in huge rooms. This a breakout session is cool. You know, but when you speak to a room of thousands of addicts, I've helped start 9 different Narcotics Anonymous meetings. 3 of which are overseas, one in Nepal, one in Taiwan, one in Australia. I've worked in sponsorship and helped tactically change lives, been used as a vessel by God, a tool by God to change lives. I'm so impressed with myself. And the disease of addiction isn't impressed one little bit. Like, I can discriminate against myself in that. And I really appreciated that share. Because it reminds me to just keep my feet on the ground. I'm still an addict. You know? I used dope just the same as the next addict coming in used dope. Whenever I got to this fellowship The very first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous I ever went to, all right, I drove up in the parking lot, and I walked up to the door, and I saw some black people sitting on the step, all right, and I opened the door just a little, and I saw more black people. So I went and got in my vehicle, and I left. I went and burned down my life for a few years more because the disease of addiction was using racism in my life long before I got to Narcotics Anonymous. Racism is one of my deep embedded character defects. It comes out and it explodes on the very people I love, sometimes the very most, you know. And the disease of addiction was using racism to keep me out of the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And whenever I got back to Narcotics Anonymous some years later, I didn't much care what people looked like. But there was some people running around in my little place in Texas, and I started hanging out with some guys in the rooms up in, let's call it North Texas, that were fresh out of prison, that were ABAC guys, and we started doing some kind of illegal things, you know, and I ended up getting to relapse behind some of that stuff, and doing that stuff, right, got me back in the rooms. Now this time when I came back, I didn't much care what anybody looked like. As a matter of fact, a guy came to my home group. This is 20 years ago. He and his wife had just come back from the Hawaii World Convention. And he spoke at my home group, and he spoke with so much clarity that I'd never heard anything like it before. I asked that man to be my sponsor, and it was 2 years after I asked him to sponsor me that he said this statement. He said, and I don't much cuss. He said, sometimes I just want people to think I'm a bad A Mexican MF-er. And I'm like, well, I understand why you want people to think you're tough. Why would you want somebody to think you're Mexican? He said, I am Mexican. I'm like, you're not Mexican. You're white. He's like, my last name is, and he gave me his last name, and I'm like, oh my God. Like somehow God had allowed me to be blinded to the fact of what my sponsor's race was. You know, my grand sponsor is a black man. You know, for the first 18 months I was clean, I had the privilege of getting to live with this man, to learn from him, to learn what recovery looks like day in, day out. Like if you ever get the chance to live with somebody with more clean time than you who's actually involved in this process, and to watch what it actually looks like to take those calls and to set. I got to listen to this man sponsoring people all across the United States and learn. I didn't know I was learning, but I got to learn what it actually is like to sponsor somebody. Like, I got raised in this deal by people that before I got here, I wouldn't have. There's very few situations I'd be involved with, you know? And like, let me tell you about, you know, we have a fourth step that works, sorts through the contradiction and confusion of our lives, okay? And so I got the chance to start working through some of that. And part of that is that I'm a gay man. I've been married to my husband for 31 years. I have 15 years clean, which means he's a saint and kept our marriage together, not me. And I run out of oxygen sometimes. And it's fine right now. But I'm very embarrassed by the fact that I have to be on oxygen, so I don't wear my oxygen. Because denying reality works so well for me. But anyway, as a gay man, I'm sitting in treatment, and there's this H&I panel that comes in, okay? And like I'd been to another few meetings of, you know, Sex Addicts Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, and this one was an H&I panel coming in from Narcotics Anonymous. And I heard something. I keyed into something they said. They said, anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity. That was it. Sexual identity. Now, what's weird, I as I was driving up here, or Christopher, who came up here with me, who drove me up here, one of the best guys in all of Narcotics Anonymous, as he was driving, I called my husband. I said, honey, I want you to go to the safe and unlock it. There's a red book, and I want you to look at the third chapter, second paragraph, last sentence, and read it to me. And send me a picture of what it says. Because in our first edition of our basic text, right, a fellowship started in 1953. It took them 30 years before they published the basic text. Hold up, I'll be back. Because passing out when you share is not a good thing. So, in the this will be the first time I've ever had to do this. I thought I was going to have to do it last weekend, sharing. And I could not get air. I thought I was going to die. But anyway, sorry about this. It's very embarrassing to me, honestly. It's very embarrassing. But in 1953, they started this fellowship. It took them 30 years to come up with our literature, right? And in the first edition of our basic text, it actually says, anyone may join us regardless of age, race, color, creed, religion, or lack of religion.
Right.
See, they had the word color in there, and they didn't have the word sexual identity. But somebody in Narcotics Anonymous, by the time that you get to our third edition revised in November of 1986, 3 years after our first basic text, somebody had the forethought to say someday there's going to be a confused gay cowboy racist Mormon that's in treatment that's going to need to hear sexual identity in order to fit himself in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. That's some of the contradiction and confusion, right? I mean, I'm the guy that I collect weird stuff. I have a lot of family stuff, and like I sometimes whenever people out at my place, you know, I'll show them a robe or a collectible knife from a certain era, and they'll be like, "Oh my gosh!" And yet that same organization would target me just as they would my black brother.
Yeah.
And yet those are the kinds of things that are in my past, you know. And I like that. I'm not a big fan of Living Clean. I'll tell you why. It's because when we had the Living Clean project, all right, is an outline, and I wrote some awesome stuff for that book. And somehow, in the edition that you carry around, it doesn't have my material. But I like what it said, and Alan read it for us, where it talks about some of this stuff is so deeply woven into our lives that sometimes we can even see it where it doesn't exist. I'll start drawing lines in between me and you when I forget it was lines that got me here in the first place. You know?
Straight up.
And anytime I try and shove you on the outside, I'm actually the person on the outside.
Amen.
You know? And it's a very weird, hurtful thing. Now, I will say, one of the things that I don't like about the Living Clean paragraph where we're at, it says the disease does not discriminate and neither should we. It puts this word should in there. Now, whenever the basic text 6th edition came out, that's the first time that we came up with the disease of addiction does not discriminate, neither should the program of Narcotics Anonymous. That's in the preface to the 6th edition. But it said neither does the program. Get to Living Clean some 4 years later, and all of a sudden they're saying should. Neither should we. But the truth is that if I'm working and applying a program, those divisions between me and you become non-existent. You know, I told you briefly that about my former thing where I needed somebody. Where I came in, I needed somebody just like me. And I still, people say things in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous that I think are weird, like keep coming back of it, you'll hear somebody will share your story and stuff. I've never found somebody that fits all those little parameters, gay, Mormon, cowboy, racist, all this stuff. I've never found that in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. But by working and applying a program of recovery, right, whenever I got ready to go on my mission as a Mormon, and it was there at this thing called the MTC that I spoke with my mission president and said, look, this is what's happening. I'm struggling with same-sex attraction. Thinking that I was being humble and responsible and truth-telling, and it ended up costing me dang near everything. Got sent home in shame, and my life took a different trajectory than what it was headed towards, and that was a very hurtful thing in my past. And I thought that it was nicely wrapped up in the past. I'd worked steps on it, living a program of recovery. Pandemic happens. We start the Recovery at Work online group, which is my home group. Travel full time around the United States, so I need a place where I see people every day who know me and know how I'm doing. Two of them, or three, four, are in the room today that I very seldom get to see in person, but we see each other all the time online. And starting this online home group, it was an awesome deal. Everything's fine. And then one day, a guy comes in our room. And there's just little key phrases that if you have a past in something, you kind of know the little phrases somebody says, you know? And he dropped a couple of phrases, and I was like, huh, let me play. Let me dog whistle back to you a little bit. I dog whistle back to him a little bit. And he's like, are you Mormon? I was like, I've never really been excommunicated. Anyway, this young man, I ended up getting to work with this man in sponsorship. You know, this man is a Mormon bishop, you know. And as a Mormon bishop, he would have been the person sitting across the table from me to help excommunicate me in a disciplinary council. He still espouses things that are 100% opposite of my real world everyday existence.
Right.
But you know what? In sponsorship and applying the program, I don't have the right to discriminate against him. Yeah. I don't get to do that because it's not about those things anymore. It's about suffering addicts who deserve, who are entitled. In our 12th step, talks about the principle of unconditional love, and it says, let me read it to you, just so I don't mess it up. Get to the right book here. Says this: the principle of unconditional love is expressed in our attitude. Anyone who reaches out for help is entitled to our compassion, our attention, and our unconditional acceptance. They're entitled to it. Where that newcomer walks in, you're like, they're so entitled. You dang right they're entitled. They're entitled to my unconditional love and acceptance. Like, they've earned that. We paid for the right to recover with our pain. Like, this is life and death, this struggle that we're engaged in. And so, I don't get the right anymore to discriminate against anybody. You know, and sometimes it's subtle in our rooms, right? People will say things to young people, right? Or people who didn't use long enough, like, I spilled more dope than you ever used. Oh. It sounds good, right?
No.
But the truth of the matter is, whenever we say we are not interested in what or how much you used, we actually mean it.
Yeah.
We actually mean it. The youngest person I've seen walk into our rooms of their own volition was at the Awakenings Group of Narcotics Anonymous in Louisville, Texas, 13 years old. You know? Like, people are getting clean younger and younger today. You know, they use different drugs than some of us used. People are using drugs now that weren't even available whenever I stopped using. You know? And I don't get to draw those separation lines, and every time I do, I not only kill them, I kill a little piece of me. The people who poured their lives into me, this entire fellowship, this literature, I love our literature. God, I love our literature. You know, I didn't write it, man. You know, they wrote this stuff. People stood in circles for decades before I got clean, praying for me.
Yeah.
Like, that's what we're doing. We're praying for the next person. I go to a meeting every single day. And the reason I go to a meeting every single day is because the addict coming in the door deserves to have a meeting open. I don't ever want somebody to look around and say, "Where's all the clean time in Narcotics Anonymous? It's right here." You know? "Where's the spiritual maturity in Narcotics Anonymous? It's right here." You know? I share myself very, very, very openly. And sometimes... sometimes I do it to an extreme, and I actually cut people off from me, right? Because I play a lot with some of the things that Alan says that we shouldn't joke about, you know? But I joke a lot about sexuality. I joke a lot about race, you know? And these are the things, and this is why when I got this topic, I'm like, they're just messing with me, man. They're just messing with me. You know, because the truth of the matter is my spirit, that pure and loving spirit, what our literature talks about, says that underneath all of it, when you pull back all the resentments, you look at your character assets, all of a sudden you start to reveal something. And that deep, dark something, if you ever get to a four-step, or have somebody get into a four-step and they're scared they're going to just go through this pile of crap and they're going to discover they're a pile of crap at the bottom of it. What that question in step one that says, "Do I think I'm a monster that's poisoned the whole world?" And that's what they actually think they're going to find. What you're actually going to find is a pure and loving spirit that lies at the core of your being. Like, that pure and loving spirit that lies at the core of my being doesn't care if you're black or gay or homophobic or anything else. What I care about is you're entitled to my love. You're entitled to my respect. You're entitled to that. Like I don't get to decide. We have absolutely no business deciding who's ready. And sometimes we hear people say that he's not ready. Oh, he's just not ready. The truth is, I don't get to decide when you're ready. I wish I did. I so wish I did. Because I'm serious. Because there's people that I watch go through so much pain that I'm like, "You're ready, you're ready, you're ready.
Be ready.
They haven't decided yet. You know? All that we get to do in this deal, whenever we look at that awesome, beautiful sentence in our literature, you know, that says the full fruit of a labor of love lives in the harvest. That always comes in its right season. It's like, I don't get to decide when harvest time is. I don't get to decide what the full fruit is. Because the person or people who wrote that sentence, I really think what they thought they was talking about was the culmination of writing the basic text of Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
And they were completely wrong. Because the full fruit hadn't come in. Because I hadn't got here yet. You hadn't got here yet. The newcomer who's walking in the door hadn't got here yet. Like, it's not done. Our labor isn't done. The harvest isn't yet. The full fruit can't even be counted yet. So my only responsibility in that is to labor. To labor in love. You know, this isn't a burden. This is what I got, and I'll use the word, and I don't mean in a religious context. This is what I was saved for. This is why God reached in the toilet bowl of life and picked me up. Was because there's a labor of love that I need to do. That there's still somebody coming in the door who needs to know. And I know I've argued with people about this before, whenever they think that I shouldn't say, you know, that I'm a gay cowboy, you know, deal with racism stuff, Mormon. But the reason I say it is because there wasn't anybody in here like that.
Yeah.
I need the next person to come in to know that. I need the next gay person who walks in the door to know that there's a gay person here.
Right.
You know? I need somebody to know that stuff. Because their life and my life depend on it. You know? I heard Alan talk about the lack of diversity in Tulsa. I was so shocked when I started going to meetings in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Because I thought, do black people here not do crack? What? Where are black people?
Right.
It is the most divided community I've ever seen. You know, especially when it comes to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. 99% of the meetings that I've been to in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 99.9% of the room is white. There's something behind that. There's a past behind that in that city. Like, and our job is to fix that.
Yeah.
Our job is to heal that.
Yeah.
Because there are people who suffer and die every day because they walk in the room in Narcotics Anonymous and they don't feel like they fit in. They don't feel like they're going to have a home here.
Right.
And it's my job to constantly reach out to people. To constantly let them know, like, I love you, man. I'm grateful you're here. You know, regardless. And look, a lot of the people that I deal with, they are people that I really believe in the core of my being, especially after the last couple of elections and seeing activities on Facebook. They are people who would actively campaign against me. And it's none of my freaking business. I had to stop looking at that stuff. I'm on social media, but I am just there to shine and post my stuff. And look at who likes it. But other than that, I had to pull back from looking at other people's political opinions because it started affecting my real world relationships with them in Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the reasons why I for several years I'm very 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 I have a federal firearms license. I have ton more guns. I am the redneck who lives in the woods with too many guns. That's exactly who I am. And have my own shooting range. All this, so I wore a lot of gun T-shirts. You know. And I had to stop wearing those in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Because I started noticing that certain people were drawn to me and other people would stay back.
Right.
And I started thinking, what am I doing? Because it's just not even about me. It's the love of God that's placed in me being held back and separating me from this person who that love is trying to reach out to.
Exactly.
Is the light that's in them that needs to shine into me, is it being blocked because of all these masks that I put up? You know? And not everybody wears masks with a pointed hood. You know? Some of them wear masks that have a red hat. You know? Or masks with a political agenda on the front. I have to be real careful about how I present myself in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous because the newcomer's watching. You know, lives depend on us not discriminating. you know? And discrimination doesn't just go to race or age or religion. It also has that word creed in it. And it's had that word creed in it since the very beginning. A creed is a system of beliefs. Sometimes I develop a system of beliefs inside of Narcotics Anonymous, right? Because I believe, and I really do, I believe that people should work our program the exact same way that I work our program, the way that my sponsor works the program with me, and the way that I work it with the people I'm fortunate enough to get to work with in sponsorship. And the truth of the matter is, I'm not doing it any better than anybody else. I read and study our literature every single day. And whenever I say study, I'm not talking read it, I'm talking study it. I've been to a lot of literature studies that are actually literature reading meetings. Literature read and share where you're at. You know, but I actually study our literature one sentence at a time. I look up words, especially words that I know the definition to, because I'm trying to key into a constant recovery, which is defined as an active change in my ideas and attitudes. I can't have a new idea if I'm going off of an old definition. I got to constantly be looking up stuff. But there are people who don't do that. And let me ask you this. If somebody's got 40 years clean, and I've got 15 years of complete total abstinence and every day studying this thing, is my recovery somehow better because they accidentally used the wrong language? You know, I don't think it is. I think that all I'm doing is we're doing it our way, you know, and my way is working for me. It doesn't give me the right to judge your system of beliefs, this creed stuff, you know. On the religion and lack of religion, let me say this, because here in the South, we have a predominant religious culture, all right? And it's relatively popular in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous to say something like, my higher power, who I choose to call, blah, 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 my personal blah, 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 blah. And it's like you think you're standing up for something. Like your God is so weak that he needs a cheerleader. And you're the head cheerleader squad with your pom-poms. Letting us know your God's name when actually the God, that same God, helped guide this. We ask for it when they ask, "May grant us wisdom that we can write according to your divine precepts." The D is capitalized. The P is capitalized. God is anonymous and hides out. God is anonymous in the program of Narcotics Anonymous. And you don't need to say a name. Because every time you say a name, what you're actually doing is telling an addict, especially a newcomer, you don't belong here. Or at the end of our 12 steps, we got a secret little curtain we're going to walk you through and show you the real guy behind the curtain. And it's dangerous when we do that. Especially when you consider that our fellowship is actually a shrinking fellowship in the United States. Where it's actually growing the most is in Iran. Yep. And I promise 99% of them ain't praying to the same God that you say, my higher power is, I choose to call blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Exactly.
So how fortunate are we that we just happen to have the truth? Wherever my job is just to share the program of Narcotics Anonymous, man. Regardless of how it lands. Regardless of whether you hear it now or you hear it 7 years from now. Because a message was being carried at that first NA meeting I ever went to. That message was carried somehow, even though I saw people that I judged because of their race on the outside and on the inside, and I left. I knew that there was a room that I could go back to.
Right.
And I've been back to that room many times because people stood in circles and prayed me in. Anyway, I'm Daniel. Thanks for letting me share.